Hello?
Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
And giggles till somebody
dies. Welcome back to another Tuesday with myself, Becky Briggs, and
Natasha Spencer-Levy
on Death of Funny Business.
Her mum is dead.
No, your mum is dead.
Sorry, my mum's dead, and so is her dad.
It can't believe it's been a week, by the way, since my boyfriend was on.
Oh, boyfriend Joe.
That was fun, actually.
Yeah.
He had a really good time. He wanted to pass that on
to you.
Do
you want to know something?
What?
Crazy.
What?
Since my aggressive heightism towards your boyfriend.
Yeah.
And how much I was like, 6'4" people, ugh, gross. Went on a date with a boy of 6'4" on Sunday. Yeah.
Is this the...
No, don't say things out loud. But yeah, I did. So I feel like a bit of a fraud now, basically. I think that's what
I mean, yeah, don't discriminate
and look,
against
the tall
ones.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to lie, guys. It wasn't that bad.
Was it fun?
Oh, yeah, we had a lot of fun. We had a great time. But my point is, I'm more interested in this height issue. Do you see what I'm saying?
Where does this stem from, Tash, huh?
No, this is literally... Yeah, we talked about this. I was like, my teenage years damaged me. All the tall boys were like, this tiny puny child. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, no. I mean, I'm just a liar and a fraud, basically. I ignored my own rule. 6 and under.
But it went well.
Yeah, but it went well. And actually, I didn't really notice the height difference. I mean, I did obviously notice the height difference, but
You are rather small.
I was like, oh God, I'm like looking up at the sky. But I literally thought of Joe. I was like, I feel bad for negging on him now.
Has he got a dead parent as well?
No. But some unresolved childhood trauma that we delved into, you know.
Good.
Classic. Overboard games was great.
Good. Did you tell him your mum's dead?
I did, yeah. Very, very casual, very chill. Yeah, it was just one of those ones where it's like, do you get on with your parents? And he's like, yeah, kind of. And then I was like, oh, yeah. He's like, well, what are you? I was like, oh, yeah, it was fine.
Out of interest, did he show, what was his reaction? And did he show much of a
He did an I'm sorry. And then I was like, no, it's all right. I have a podcast about grief. And,
nice.
Just went right straight in there.
Do you think he's tuning in?
Probably. He likes radio, so it's his whole thing. If you're listening. But he hasn't texted me back, the little dick. So,
okay.
Since yesterday afternoon. So, I'm calling it dead on arrival, but all is well. I had a good time, do you know what I mean? Took me on an indoor slide.
Brilliant. Where?
There's an indoor slide for those who want to know. I think he clocked it quite quickly. He was like, this girl's going to love this idea. There's a brew dog in Waterloo, and they have a huge indoor slide, which you can just go on. There's no one like watching it. There's no one watching it. You can just go on it, and honestly it was fantastic. So thrilling.
That feels like something to like unleash your inner child that I've suppressed
1,000%. He turned to me and he's like, do you want to go and get another drink? And I was like, this place is quite like, this is where we are, is like quite like good vibes, like I don't want to like risk it and like get someone really loud and gross and like then we can't talk. And then he was like, well yeah, but this place, it has a slide. And I literally went I was like, what? Yeah, we're going now.
I need some of that.
It was great. So, yeah.
Good for you. Going on a date.
Thanks. I mean, chill. You know, vibes, good vibes. Dating all over the place.
Good. And today.
God bless. Oh, we should talk about people.
We should talk about people, right? Because we've got two guests on today.
Yeah. Who do we have?
We have Rebecca Finegloss. We love a Rebecca, don't we?
We do love Rebecca. And guess what her parents' names were?
Mark and Susan.
Which is whose name,
My
Rebecca?
My parents' names.
Your name is Rebecca.
I know.
Her mum and dad are called Mark and Susan.
I know.
And your mum and dad are called Mark and
I know.
Susan. That's so weird.
That is weird.
Producer Yaz had not clocked this. She's shocked, shaking her head.
To be fair, why would you know my parents' name? Yeah, my dad was called Mark.
Yeah, and
my mum is called Susan.
Crazy.
Bizarre. Anyway, enough about me. Rebecca Finegloss is going to be joining us on the online because on the online she lost her father Mark, as we know, and her mother Susan, and also dealt with loss in other ways, separation, which will be interesting
from
her husband, which will be interesting to kind of go into because we definitely know how losses, even in breakups and divorce and separation, are just as painful and triggering.
Yeah, for sure.
And then she decided to leave leave her job. Fair enough after that. And document her grieve leave. Love that.
Yeah, I like
online.
Grieve. That's good. That's good.
And since then, it's become a community of over, so I think, 25,000 to provide help, resources and humour. Love it. To these people grieving. So we're going to be chatting to her first.
She sounds like fun.
She sounds like a lot of fun.
She sounds like she gets us.
Grieve leave.
Already.
I think I need grieve leave.
Well, you know, when you have an itch on your face and you can't find it, but you can feel it somewhere.
great content, Tash.
Great content. I'm not gonna touch it.
Do you want to intro the second guest?
Yeah, and then we have Lisa. I want to say Keyfather.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go with that. It's a long word, but anyway, she lost her husband Eric to brain cancer in 2011, just 2.5 weeks after his tumor was discovered. Similar vibes to your experience of losing dad really quickly, and their daughter was only 7 years old.
Oh, that's
and,
so sad.
I know, so sad. But she was working as a social worker and a therapist, and yeah, she has a book and a podcast titled "Grief Is a Sneaky Bitch," which I kind of love. That's very us coded.
Yeah, it is.
Grief is a sneaky
grief coded.
I like it. Yeah. So we're going to talk to her as well about her experience, and it'd be nice to talk to someone who's experienced all of that, but also is a therapist. We've talked to people before like that, but I always find those conversations really interesting because they kind of have such a specific. A bit more professional view on it,
exactly,
from like a scientific standpoint, which is sometimes quite nice.
No, we do need that because we bring what we know.
We're not doctors.
We are simply giving our advice on.
We're just girls.
We're just girls talking about death.
We're just girls talking about death and, you know, worms and stuff.
But also, I think something I noted last week when we were chatting to Joe is that we were making a lot of jokes about stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm actually gonna out us both.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think we can be a little bit too jokey.
Of course we
what
can.
What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, we 100%. I think that's the defense mechanism at the end of the day for me and you.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's like the, not necessarily that we should carry on being like, oh, ain't it funny? But Joe's not like that.
No.
Joe doesn't do that. So we were trying to like
exactly.
rip him. And he was
saying the way he deals with grief was through humour.
Yeah.
So that
he
is
He does like a laugh. He's
he
not,
loves.
He's a very funny boy.
Funny boy, isn't he?
He's a funny boy.
He's a funny boy. But also, just so any like new listeners, we do obviously care a lot about
what
we're talking about deep down.
Yeah, 1,000%.
And death it is a funny business, but it is also
very serious.
Really raw, especially for people who have just experienced it as well.
100%.
I don't think I could have laughed about it probably within the first year or two of dad dying.
I mean, I was 7, so.
So yeah. I can imagine if you're listening to this as someone who has just experienced a death, I'm sorry, because I think it might come across like we're taking the piss.
I know we're not taking the piss because I think at the end of the day, the vibe is that it's not supposed to be scary. And kind of laughing. I always talk about laughing in the face of death because death is supposed to be something that we're very fearful of and very scared of.
Yeah.
And actually, we can find some light in something that's really, really tragic.
Yeah.
Also, it's fucking awful. I mean, yeah, I spent yesterday dredging up some memes at therapy. And, it's fucking awful. Feel like absolute trash. Oh, she was like, Dr. Emily, love you. She was like, we need to explore this old wound. It's still, you know, your mum's and other stuff. Like, goodbyes and all this. And I was like, yeah. And then spent the whole day, like, pretty much in bed because I was like, ah, fuck. So don't get us wrong. We definitely cry.
I walked in today and Tash was quieter than usual, which is always shocking. But also a really good reminder that although we come on here and do this show and laugh about this stuff, it is still really tough. And we have days where we go and just kind of want to be on our own or, like, want to kind of recoil slightly, and that's also okay. So although we're laughing, like, we still have days where we feel really crap.
I think there's, like, definitely for me it's like a capacity thing. It's like, you know, I've been talking about this a lot, but, like, there's definitely like a
bucket full.
You know, like, you're always gonna have different levels of it, and that's okay too.
It is. Should we see what Rebecca Feingloss has to say about
this? Let's do it.
All right, we're back after the break. Foo Bar Radio.
Politics Uncensored.
We kind of act like COVID didn't happen. Well, do you think it's had a lasting impact, at least on that young generation that experienced it?
The legacy of it in schools, you see the legacy of it in people's mental health. We're seeing the legacy of it even in public services, even in hotels, hospitality. Everything was stripped back to the bone, and the UK did not have the resilience to recover. So I think we are still definitely living in a post-COVID society where nothing really works as well as it did. If you think things were damaged by Brexit, things were double damaged by COVID.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Danny Harmer, hello.
Thank you, what an introduction.
I heard in an interview, this may no longer be the case, but in 2020 you said you never actually read the original Tracy Beaker.
I've still never read it, and I'm gonna go down with this ship, and quite frankly, I shall never read it. I've got this far in life. And do you know what? I think it's kind of, in a weird way, I think it helped me get the part because I had no idea of this character apart from the character that I made her.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
You might then see friends, family that require a little bit of support, financial advice. How do you go about sharing that advice, sharing that support without being condescending?
A practical tip that everyone can do that is low friction, send them financial content that you like. If you have a favorite content creator, if you see an article that you like, send them the video and just ask them, what do you think? And then that can begin a conversation around it.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. Hey, fun fact, people also call me Becky too.
Love it.
By the way.
Two Beckys. I've got another fun fact for you.
Yeah, this is crazy.
Tell me.
This is crazy. My dad was called Mark. And my
I know.
It's called Susan.
Oh, I know already. I know. We're basically the same just across the pond.
So
isn't it,
weird.
Isn't it? That is quite, and we're Rebecca's. This is wild.
Mark with a K or with a C?
With a K.
Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Do you call your mom Susie?
My mom, oh, well, this is like a whole nother topic of conversation, but my dad got remarried to another woman named Susan.
Stop.
So we differentiated and called my deceased mother was Sue.
Oh my God.
That's like a whole nother.
Crazy. My dad likes to date people called Caroline or Karen. And my dad's sister is also called Caroline. That's kind of weird.
Is there something in that, do you think?
Maybe something Freudian.
Familiar.
Yeah, something Freudian.
Rebecca.
Probably. Thanks for joining us. I want to dive straight in. It sounds like you've had a lot of death, a lot of separation in your life. I'm cutting to the chase.
Rebecca, Becky,
what?
America, in America, she's laughing a lot. She's like, this is, yeah.
Too much.
That's accurate.
No, this is so my vibe. Do you know how excited I am for this combo? I'm like, my energy, my people.
Yes.
Like, yes and yes to all of
yes.
this.
Amazing.
Yeah. Lots of death, lots of separation.
We were just chatting about it earlier about how I think that sometimes our show, well, we hope it quite, like, won't be misconceived because we're always quite, I consider ourselves quite bubbly and fun,
we're
even
trying.
Though we're chatting about death.
Mm.
What are you the same?
That is literally me. Like, if I ever meet someone at a party and they're like, oh, so Becky, what do you do? Rebecca, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I work in grief and loss, but I swear I'm normal and fun.
Yeah, I swear. That's what I always say.
Caveat.
Like, it's not, I always say, yeah, I've got a podcast about death. It's funnier than it sounds.
Oh, yeah. We're so the same vibe, y'all. Like, amazing. For sure. It is important.
For sure. We love grieve, leave.
Yeah, we do.
Thank you.
Tell us about this.
Yes, tell us all about it.
So this is all rooted in both of my parents being dead, which was implied a minute ago. my mom died when I was a kid, brain cancer. That's Sue. Good old Sue. And my dad died very suddenly in 2020, totally out of the blue. No one saw it coming. I didn't. I talked to him on the phone like an hour before it happened. And I ended up also getting divorced a year after my dad died, which was a good choice.
Good fun. Yeah.
Came with its own grief.
Yeah. Did the divorce, was that anything, you don't have to answer this, but was the divorce anything to do with like the death? Do you think that like you were, I don't know, was that as a consequence of like, I can't. I'm just gonna, I don't know, sometimes it's easier to face loss than like face love, right?
Honestly, grief is the ultimate test of anyone's relationship, romantic or platonic. If you go through a loss together, you will see and test all of the limits of what was hard before the grief and loss, and then what happens and what is hard still after, right? Like things that were already cracks in your relationship are just gonna get cracked wide open, and either you grow together or you don't. And in my case, we did not grow together. It just kind of exacerbated what was already there. But after all of that happened, you know, I was 31 with two dead parents and a divorce. And I was like, you know, I am feeling grief, but I don't even really know what that means. And I started looking for resources on the internet where I live for, you know, what could feel relevant to me. And I didn't find anything that really spoke to me. And eventually I built a community and this worldwide company, and now we teach people about grief and support them through their grief through things like funny memes and all kinds of content.
Yes.
We like funny memes.
We like funny memes.
That's why I knew we'd get along.
31, like you're super young. I mean, like, I think we're all super young, but how is that experience for you dealing with like this, almost like the third loss then? So you've had your father, your mother, and then like kind of the separation from your husband.
I call it my grief buffet.
Nice.
That's my grief buffet of life that, I don't know, some of us are just unlucky enough to get our grief really front loaded. And all of my grief in my life, hopefully, knock on wood, the worst things that have happened to me will, that have already happened to me in my life. Like I think I have front loaded them. They are done.
Yeah, I like that view.
Yeah. But not everyone will experience that, right? Other people experience their grief and loss on a much more normal timeline. And I just, like y'all, right? We get to be everyone's grief friend because we were unlucky enough to get it early.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking of all these milestones. Like how was that not having perhaps what your friends had? Or have?
I wouldn't recommend it.
No. Me too.
Sucks. You know, because my mom died so young, she was diagnosed with brain cancer when I was 5. She died when I was 13. So I never really got to have like a very normal mothering experience. But that in itself was normal for me. Right? Like I didn't know a life with a mom that was well. So I feel like it started to sink in when I was getting married, actually. And it's like you go dress shopping. I don't know if y'all are married, but you go dress. I'm married and divorced, right? So I get to joke about all sides of it. But there's this assumption that your mom is doing all of your wedding things with you. And I just kept realizing over and over again, like, oh, other people have moms to help them with things like this, or like simple things like other milestones, right? Like puberty, all of that.
Yeah, for sure. Like first boyfriends and dates and like, not gonna lie, having sex for the first time.
Yeah.
Tampons.
Oh, girl. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know.
Yeah. Oh, should I tell this story? This is a weird story. I'm going to tell the story.
I can't wait.
Basically, obviously, just me on my period at the age of 13. Like, holy shit, I've shat my pants. And it wasn't shit. I was like, oh, it's not. I haven't pooped my pants. It's something else. And then I went, oh, I know what this is. And then I had to go tell my dad because my dad is the only person in the house. And my dad, I swear to God, people, I went in and I went like this. I went, I'm like breathing really heavy. I'm like, daddy, I started my period. And then I ran out the room. And then he like called me back. He's like, Natasha. And I was like, come back in. I was like, what? I was like, don't talk, don't look at me. And then he goes, I didn't say that. But then he says to me, he says, are you all right? And I said, yes.
That's
and then
nice.
He said, and then he said, guys, I'm not kidding. He goes, congratulations. And I went, no. I was like, no, my God.
I love that. Yeah. No, that's so sweet.
Oh, it made me want to, like, I was literally like.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, what else could he have said?
No, it's cute. Don't be wrong. It's cute. But it also made me want to, like, I don't know, rip out my eyes. I was like, I don't want to be a woman. Anyway, sorry. That was my little takeaway from that.
But yes, but anyone with a dead mom at that age, like, we all have our awkward tampon period story. God. Like, it's parallel. Yeah, I'm so with you.
It's super weird. Like, yeah, it's very strange experience. I don't know about you, but like, I also find, I sometimes talk about this, like, not having a mom, I think, made me, although, like, obviously there's bad stuff, I think it also, like, made me quite a bit more body positive than I imagine I would have been without with my mom, because a lot of my friends, like, a lot of my friends when we were teenagers, like, they'd be saying things about themselves, like, oh, I'm, like, fat or whatever, or, like, I've got this and this, and I'd be like, I don't know what the fuck are you guys are talking about, like, and then I realize it's all kind of from their mom.
Yeah, because they probably overhear their moms talking about it.
This is what I'm saying. And then, but for me, I was like, oh my God, shut the fuck up. Like, what are you guys talking about? Like, everything's fine. Like, what you're not fat. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I feel like I had a different experience because I didn't, I don't know, like one of the earliest memories that I have of my mom. Oh, this is so sad. Ugh, I don't want to like kill the vibe completely, but you know, I mean, I don't know if they have this in England, but in the US we had Slim Fast shakes. Yeah, these were like a whole thing in America when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And my mom was literally fucking dying of brain cancer. And I remember her having Slim Fast shakes. Because she still wanted to lose weight. Like the body messaging was so messed up.
Yeah.
And so even like from a very young age, I still internalized this not great messaging. I think my dad did the best that he could.
Yeah.
I have an older brother too. So I was raised in a household of men. Mm. And I think he did the best that he could to help keep me confident and proud of my body. But it was the early 2000s were a weird time.
I mean, that's like a whole like plethora of danger and like awfulness for women. Oh, it was so bad. Anyway, let's get back to the point. You took a year off after your dad died, and was this post divorce as well? So we're like, okay, doubling down. So I wondered like where the spur to be like, no, this is it, I'm taking a year off kind of came from, and also what you explored and discovered on your year off.
Oh my God, totally. I think so many of us, when we go through a loss, let's just take one loss, like a normal person goes through one loss at a time, right? So if you go through a loss and you are working full-time or part-time or just employed at all, you feel overwhelmed probably going back to work. I certainly did. Just after the loss of my own, of my dad, then add on compounded loss of my marriage ending. Again, even though it was a good thing, like that came with its own grief too.
Yeah.
And there was just a moment that I remember very specifically. I would get emails that were marked urgent. And I was like, this is not fucking urgent. Like your spreadsheet is not.
Yeah.
This is the phone call that my dad had dropped dead. That was urgency in my life. And I think I reached a point in my professional life and in my personal life where I felt jaded about the meaning I was deriving from work, because my entire like moral compass, I think, reset when my dad died, especially. And then I was feeling so overwhelmed of just like nowhere that I felt like was stable and an anchor for me, because my dad was gone. I had no relationship. We were in the middle of COVID, for God's sake. And I was like, I have to take my foot off the gas pedal. I have to do something different in my life. And for me, what a privilege it was to be able to take time off work. Mm. And I said, you know, I think I want to go learn about what grief and loss is because I literally don't know. And I have a feeling I'm not the only person in my age range who is like, I don't even know where to turn to for grief help. And so I started learning myself. I started reading, I started traveling, I started writing about it, and grief leave took off from there.
What did you do on your first day?
Well, we can add to the grief buffet. I was actually with my late grandmother on my first day on January 1st, 2022. This is my mom's mom, my Nana. She lived to be 98 and she died in my year of grief leave.
Nice.
And because of course, just like added,
yeah.
You know?
Why not? Yeah.
I was with her. I spent time going through old photos with her.
Oh, that's
and
great.
Just like, it was incredibly sweet. And she had her like little magnifying glass because she couldn't see shit. And she's like looking and she'd look at pictures of people and she'd tell me who her old friends were. And then she'd be like, oh, that's, you know, whoever, Stacy, she's probably dead. And then flip to the next picture and be like, oh, that's Philip. Yeah, he's probably dead. And it was just
so much.
Perfect.
Yeah. Pretty much. So a year of grief leave. It's actually quite hard to say. Grief leave.
You had it right.
Do you think that, did you physically start to explore grief, or were you more like, okay, I'm going to take this time to kind of learn about myself, I'm going to maybe go traveling? What did you do? Like, what was the year like?
All kinds of things. So it really ran the gamut of trying yoga for the first time because I historically am not a flexible person and am not a quiet person and never ever wanted to meditate. And like actually physically getting in a physical setting, and it's, I'm going to use the word spiritual kind of in quotes here because I wouldn't consider myself a spiritual person really either. But getting myself into that mindset of like, what does it look like to actually sit in my grief in silence? And I was like, crying doing yoga. I volunteered at a grief summer camp called Experience Camp.
We've spoken to Experience Camps.
Who'd you talk to? Did you talk to Sarah, the ED?
I can't remember. Oh my goodness. Oh no, we literally, this is the episode that I like burst into tears. They like, and then they totally invited me to come along and do that. Would you recommend?
Do
I'm
it.
Gonna come.
Oh,
I'm doing it. This is
oh my God.
It.
Oh my God.
Second sign.
Yeah, to go to Experience.
That is the first time I ever felt normal in my entire life.
That's what made me cry the last time. That's exactly what I said. I was like, they
Michelle
were
talking, Cove.
Michelle.
Yeah, I love Michelle.
This grief world is tiny.
Love Experience Camps. We had such a good chat with her. She was so nice. So nice. Okay, how was your experience there?
Unreal. And I'm not like a camper girly. Like, I had never been to a sleepaway camp before.
That doesn't really exist here. So yeah, I get you.
Not really for my family at all. But this was the perfect experience for experience camps. I volunteered with a cabin of third graders. I think it was third graders. I think that's right. Rising fourth graders. So they were like about the same age that I was in kind of the prime of my mom dying.
Yeah.
And I saw so much of myself in them. I had one camper who had also lost both of her parents. And so that'll make me cry immediately talking about of just what it felt like to be seen by a child and us to sort of learn from each other. And then there's so much beauty in crying together, having these like really deep moments, like sitting around in a grief circle together in the morning and then right after going to play like water balloon toss or whatever and just being like a fucking normal kid with them, you know? And I think that was really healing for me to see, like, I was just a kid. Like, I flipped back and forth between my grief and being just a kid as an adult. Like, looking at that was incredibly meaningful.
Yeah.
Also, grief camp was just really fun because you're with other adults who also have dead parents. And so everyone's just talking about their dead person, and it is beautiful. It was a joy. I loved every minute.
That sounds so nice. Oh,
I wish we had that here.
Maybe that's our job. Maybe. I think that might be our job, you know. That's what I talked about, because when we first talked about doing this, I was like, I've always wanted to have a charity for kids.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Rebecca, what do you like about being alone? Like, on your own.
Oh. What do I like about being alone?
Are you okay
there's so
with
much
that?
I can say here. Oh my God, yeah. Here's the thing. Here's what I'll tell you is so much of my grief and dating life is completely intersected. Mm-hmm. Like, I was such a serial monogamist having a dead mom. I think I was always looking for boys to fill this void in me. Like, oh, I need someone to attach myself to.
Becky's looking
you're
at
giggling.
Me funny. She's looking at me funny.
Does this sound familiar?
I feel personally attacked.
I feel also personally attacked in a great way. Yeah, no, yeah. Basically, Rebecca, we feel you, we hear you, we feel the same.
Yeah, we just want to be saved.
The thing is, like, I don't know how to tell you this, but no one can fill that void for you. Yeah. You have to fill it yourself.
Yeah.
And I didn't learn that really until I gathered enough courage to get divorced.
Mm.
Because, like, what I finally realized after my dad was dead too, and I'm sitting there and I'm fucking 30 with two dead parents, I'm like, no one is going to save me. No one can heal me. No one can fix me. I have to be enough. Mm. I have to be enough for myself. And it was in that moment that I was realizing, well, if I'm not happy in my relationship, why am I still here? Like, why am I in this? And it grew from there. I became much more comfortable being alone, and I wanted to be alone. At some point, I realized I would rather be alone, unmarried, than be in a relationship that wasn't right for me.
For sure.
I will tell you, I have a wonderful boyfriend now, wonderful partner. He is the absolute best. We are both divorced. I do not think that's a coincidence. But I will say, like, we each really view ourselves as whole individuals coming in to create something that is greater than, you know, the sum, right? Like, we don't need each other. We want to be with each other.
That's so important.
Yeah,
took a long time to get there.
Yeah. My therapist always says, well, I always say to my therapist, you have to be, like, healthy in yourself before you can, like you look after yourself so that you can look after someone else.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
Totally.
You come first so you can help look after someone else. Like, that's the kind of vibe.
Because if you have a wobble, or, like, what if your partner dies? Then what? Like,
oh, shit, yeah. Becky's like, straight to 100.
Well, yeah, I mean, I am like that.
Wait,
but
what? You said, did you say a wobble?
A wobble. Like, if you have, like, a...
That's so cute. What does that mean?
Like, you know, if you have, like, an emotional day or whatever, like, if you have a little bit of a wobble.
Oh my God, I'm saying that immediately.
Take it.
Like, you haven't quite fallen over.
Yeah.
You're kind of
just
on the tightrope.
You're having a wobbly day. Like, I'm probably having a wobbly day. Like, a little bit, like, fragile, you know? Feel a little bit delicate.
Yeah. I always go to 100. But what I meant by that was that, yeah, I do go to extremes, which is another thing I need to sort of work on myself as to why I do that. But I always think if, you know, something happens to your partner, or if something happens to anyone in your life, and you're not feeling, like, good enough in yourself, then you're just gonna go back to being zero.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like if your cup is at 100, or, like, at 90 or 95, you know, okay, let's go to 80. If your cup's at 80.
But also, if your cup's lower, that's okay. How much can you give back? Like, what's the vibe that's happening? Like, it's all about balance, isn't it?
Balance.
We're all working this out. Me in my single life, and you in your loving relationship with your tall boyfriend. Anyway, not jealous at all.
She's not.
I'm not.
Wait, can I tell you one more thing about dating
that
I feel like totally follows here? So because my mom died when I was 13, my dad was dating at the same time that I was dating as a teenager, and my brother was dating.
Yep, right.
And so that created a really interesting household dynamic for us of, like, what does it look like for an adult and his two teen children to all be dating at different points in their lives?
That's fascinating.
And so that's, like, a whole nother conversation about, like, what does it look like to watch your parent date after a death, and then you're trying to navigate your own romantic life as a teenager, and that's just a mess, you know. But it was a weird way to learn about relationships, like in that context.
And finally, I guess Rebecca, it's been so nice to talk to you, but I wonder if you have any final thoughts about grieving, new grievers, people who are still grieving, and also you do so much work for employers and how they can help people help their employees grieve. Oh my gosh, lots of griefs. I wonder if you had any advice or wisdom to share just as a final thought.
I think the bottom line is that we're all grieving, but so often we're pretending that we're not. And the energy that we spend pretending like we're not grieving is just exhausting. So let's just be a little more open and honest with our friends, with the people who care about us, and even with our colleagues and our employers about the real things that are happening in our lives. And I think you will be surprised at how much energy it actually saves you when we just talk a little more openly about our grief. That's my biggest advice, man. It's normal.
Thank
Rebecca, you're amazing. Love Rebecca.
My God, y'all are amazing. I hope thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Fabulous day.
Have a lovely day.
Thank you for talking to us.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
And to the rest of our listeners, we're going to be back straight after the break. And we'll be back with Lisa Kefauver.
Yeah.
FUBAR Radio.
What the Health with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
I'm joined by Alex Mitten, retreat host and mentor.
I think a lot of people are lonely, surrounded by people at the minute. Like, you know, especially living in London, there's fucking people everywhere. But we sort of live these quite strange lives now where we're quite closed down emotionally. You know, even just like with our voice, we don't really speak that often sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees, so don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When is too early to say I love you? Soph said it the night we met.
Yeah. Okay, let's just clear this up, right? When I said I love you, I remember I said it in the car.
In the cab, yeah.
In the cab, and I was like, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah, well, that was the day I made you my girlfriend, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I said, I love you, and you were like, I love you too. And I was like, I love you, 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 I love you so much, I love you so much, oh my God, I love you.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I want to find happiness and I need him to be kind.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello, welcome back to Death, a funny business. We are joined with Lisa. Hello.
Hello, ladies. Nice to see you.
Oh, a gorgeous voice. Gorgeous, mellow voice comes through the headphones. I love it. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. I'm getting to talk, maybe like you, about my favorite subject, which is always a mystery to most people, which is, you know, this thing that happens to all of us. So I'm excited to be in conversation with the two of you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Why is this your favorite subject?
Ooh, because facing our mortality is what makes life precious.
That's some serious wisdom straight off the bat, Lisa.
Yeah. I mean, that's the short and sweet of it, is that it's all coming for us, no matter who you are, what you do, how much money you make, it's all coming for us. So, you know, to quote Mary Oliver, get a poetry in right off the bat. What are we going to do with this one wild and precious life? And that's why it's my favorite topic, not to mention the vulnerability, the connection, all the things.
Yes. We want to dive straight into it. Ask you why, like, can we talk about grief as a sneaky bitch, please? It's such
that title.
A good title. I'm actually kind of mad that it's not ours.
I know. Yeah. We were saying that is a bit of us.
Yeah, that is.
Oh, thank you. It's so funny. Over the years, I've been producing my podcast, Grief is a Sneaky Bitch, for 6 years now. And the book has been out for about a year and a half, 2 years, same title. And it's interesting, the diversity of people who love it, from like very well-known rabbis to like my sister girlfriends to, you know, like serious CEOs. It's just an interesting way. And I think it's because it's so true. Mm. It's so, you know, I think poetry, a judicious use of cussing, metaphor helps us get at things that are so complex or maybe overwhelming that you have to like kind of cut through at a slant.
Yes.
And Grief is a Sneaky Bitch is exactly that. It came from a real story in my life. I said it out loud once years ago after my husband died, and it just sort of stuck in my head. And when I knew I wanted to do this work, and how was I going to get people to, like you're doing, to listen to a conversation on the subject, Grief as a Sneaky Bitch came right to mind. And it has a couple of meanings I'm happy to share if that's of interest.
Oh, yeah. Please. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think of Grief as a Sneaky Bitch as sort of being like a double entendre, if you will. It's two. One is, grief is a sneaky bitch. Inherently, meaning grief is messy and nonlinear and wild and uncontained and, you know, comes in waves and lives with this and shows up in all of these complex ways. So that sneakiness in it, and then the cheekiness of the sneaky bitch part, is true. But the sort of underlayer really gets at the mission of my work, which is to change the narratives of grief. We have a very problematic, singular, untrue story of grief in our broader culture. And that fits very much with our culture that is always in ascent, always improving, very linear, that there's a top 10 list way to do everything. Mm. And so we have this assumption that grief could be like that too, if we just worked hard enough and tried hard enough.
Wow.
And so my goal is like, grief is, my work is to sort of knock that down, because I personally think that though grief is difficult, it's made unnecessarily challenging because of that gap between the story we tell about grief and the actual lived messiness of what grief, and sacredness, by the way, of what grief is. So grief is a sneaky bitch because it is, but also it doesn't necessarily need to be as sneaky as it is. And that's why I'm on the mission to do the work that I am.
Yeah. You call yourself a grief activist. Yeah. What does that, like, how, what does that mean to you, and how is it different from being a therapist or like someone in the grief space?
Yeah. I chose that word quite intentionally. I am a social worker. I'm trained in narrative therapy, though I don't hold a license now. So in the US, you don't call yourself a therapist, even though I do work with people one-on-one from all my training. But I know people and I love and admire them. So if you're listening and you're one of them, please don't be insulted. I don't like the word expert. And I'm noticing a lot of people calling themselves a grief expert. And expert also implies that there's one right way to do it and that you can just figure it out and get to the end and voila. And an activist really comes at the crossroads of what I'm trying to do, which is kind of shake up, and that's what activists do, our traditional way of thinking about and talking about and engaging with grief. And it's kind of pushing back at our cultural standards and norms, including, by the way, in my opinion, and I'm saying this as a social worker, the over psychology, the over pathology of grief. I'm trying to bring it back to, like, we in our ancestral inheritance know how to do grief. It's communal and it's wailing and it's messy and it's sacred and it's beautiful. But we live in a culture that has, as I said, neat and tidy, capital, you know, all the things that are our culture have stripped it away. And so then when people are showing up in the very real, messy, not quick ways of being with grief, we tend to label it pathological. So the activism comes at from a lot of different angles, but it's in a way trying to reclaim our inheritance. Frances Weller, if you, I'm sure you probably know Frances Weller, the great psychologist and thinker on grief. And he reminds us that grief is a core human faculty. And activism is like trying to shake us all up to reclaim that for ourselves, because that's where we get back to where we started today, ladies, which is when we can be with our grief and bear witness and hold space to other people's grief, we actually get connected to the sacredness of life and the truth of our interconnection with each other and the world, not just humans.
No, that's very interesting, because there's definitely something very, very true about the fact that when, you know, there's all these capitalistic material things that are put in place to kind of support us once we start grieving, but the moment you actually start grieving, none of those things are useful at all. Like, that, like, so the white clean sheets of it all don't really fucking work. So I was gonna say, you've also talked, like we're talking about dismantling, like, these ideas, and because obviously we have this very sick, like, we talk about this all the time, but what are some of the most damaging things we can tell ourselves about grief? What do you think is the things that really affect, really come from that structure that don't help us as human beings?
Yeah, this is always such a challenge to come up with my top five, of course, because I rail at the top five idea in the first place. I call these grief myths or grief beliefs.
Yeah.
We all hold a set of grief beliefs, whether or not we ever named the word grief or not. These are generally false and harmful assumptions we have about what grief, and I'm going to use air quotes here, even though we're on the air, should or shouldn't look like. I think at the top has to be the idea that grief is a problem to be fixed. We have this false assumption that grief is a problem and that our job individually for ourselves or when we show up for one another is to fix them. But grief is actually the most normal and necessary response to loss. So when we assume that, we see ourselves as a problem. So we have a narrative of ourselves as wrong or problematic or stuck. You know, we label ourselves. We, as I call, should all over ourselves. I did say should, not the other S word. But it's also problematic because, to what you were just saying, is that we're then showing up for other people instead of holding space and bearing witness and saying my favorite phrase. It was one of my early empathy cards. There's nothing I can say except this is a fucking bullshit and it sucks so much, because that's what you really say to somebody. We show up and say at least ... Someone said to me while I was taking my 44-year-old husband off life support in the hospital, I was 40 years old, our daughter was 7 at house, and he said to me, because he had this assumption that he needed to fix my pain instead of just being with it, "Don't worry, Lisa, he's going to be in a better place soon." And at his memorial, they said, "Don't worry, you're young, you'll find love again." I know, gross and gross.
It's,
and if
almost
you're hearing this,
like they're trying to fix the situation, and
they're
also
trying to fix it,
complete what was, and that's never going to happen. Like, you can never go back to what was, and there is just going to be a new normal.
No, exactly.
So, but so many people say that, and I think, why? Are we lost for words? Are we not educated?
I mean, I think it comes back to what we were touching on earlier, is we live in a grief illiterate culture. None of us were taught. We were, you know, change the subject, stop talking about it. So, you know, I have some compassion for all of us because we weren't raised, many of us, most of us, with that. I think when people say that, it's rarely from malicious intent, although I'm sure there are a few jerks out there who say things maliciously. I think it's because we haven't learned ourselves to be with our own pain. And when we see somebody else in pain, we can't we actually can, but we don't believe we can bear it. And so when that young man who was about my husband's age said that to me, I really think he was actually trying to appease his own pain and fear that if this guy can die and I'm his age and he was healthy before this, it could happen to me too. I think it's about a kind of self-appeasement to the pain. Mm. There's more grief myths if you want me to go on, but I know I answered that question really long, but the grief is a problem to be fixed is probably one of the most problematic causes that downstream chaos for us. I also think things like assuming that it's only related to death loss. Grief comes from all kinds of trauma, catastrophic injuries, the deaths of dreams, things that didn't come to pass. We can even grieve things that we choose to leave. So I think our narrowness of our assumption about what causes grief is problematic. And I'll just add a third that I think is at the heart of, well, in my book, but at the heart of the work I do with a lot of people is we assume that grief, we call grief as if we all collectively know it and we think it's just sadness and that you'll be sad for a while and then eventually you'll stop being sad. But grief impacts our emotional, physical, cognitive, spiritual, relational well-being. And if you don't know that, then you don't understand why you're having heart issues, fatigue, why you're all of a sudden having immunity compromised issues, why you have brain fog and you can't function, why your relationships are falling apart, why you're having a crisis of faith, right? So like expanding from grief is just feeling sad. And by the way, other emotions too. Grief is also being pissed the F off. Just want to give people permission who are listening. If you're like pissed and irritated by people in your grief, welcome to grief.
It's that's so true. Literally me the last 2 days after being upset about mom and they're just everybody's kind of irritating me.
I would see happy couples or a couple someone would be saying like, oh, my husband didn't blah, blah, blah. And it took everything I had not to be like, well, my husband's dead. Yeah. So
shut up, Karen.
So shut it up. Exactly.
It's so easy to Google and find comfort in, you know, how to fix grief. I get it. I get why people do it. I think I struggle sometimes myself to know how to feel better. But what are your kind of first steps to knowing what to do? If you're saying that there aren't any rules around grief, like what's your kind of response to that?
Yes. I think the reason I emphasize that so much, I promise I'm going to offer some skills. I think of them as skills or practices, which is what we need for life, by the way, not just for grief, is I think it's just important to dismantle the idea that there's one right path, because otherwise we get obsessed and then we get stuck and then we start shooting all over ourselves, as I said, and then we don't see a different way forward. So it's just important to know that there's going to be lots of ebbs and flows. You're going to try some things, just like when you were learning to ride a bike or you were learning an instrument. You're going to try some things. Sometimes it's going to work. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes you just need more practice. So that's the base there. I think it starts with a lot of mindfulness, a lot of noticing and mindfulness practices that requires us to be in the present moment. So to build a practice, you don't have to sit in meditation if you don't want to, although I am a big proponent of it. But it's a practice of noticing if your mind is spending time in the future, if you've time traveled to the future, if you've time traveled to the past, noticing when that happens, ushering your attention back to this moment, being in your body, being with your breath, noticing your feet on the ground. It starts with arriving, always practicing arriving back in this moment. I think the second is reframing how we talk to ourselves about our big feelings. Things especially like fear and sorrow and loneliness are kind of convincing little liars in that they convince you that you've always felt this way and you're always going to feel this way. And so my practice of speaking back to ourselves, you can do this through journaling, you can do it through talking to somebody like me in a session, you can do it with your girlfriends, you know, right there, is to remember no feeling lasts forever. Not one single emotion has ever lasted. Think about it. The last time you were giggly with joy and excitement and enthusiasm, didn't last. Bummer, I know. I'm like a bummer here in the morning.
But then thank God the really right. shit but moments they got the didn't other last, didn't. Right?
Yeah.
Emotions are meant to move. Though I do not believe, I don't trade in the idea that emotions are good or bad. They're just information. So I think another skill is to just do your best, and this takes practice, is when the big floods of emotions, anxiety or anger or distress or sorrow come, to just also be with it, listen to it, allow it to move through you so that it doesn't get stuck in you. As I think about it in like a loose grip metaphor, we don't want to push away our grief, meaning we don't want to have open palms like pushing it away, because grief will find a way. She is a sneaky bitch in that way. Like, she will come back and show up in physical distress or emotional distress. But you also don't want to cling tight. I feel sad. I'm always going to feel sad, and like hold on to it too much. You want kind of a loose grip. Exactly. As it were.
It's like you say, like, grief isn't linear, and and I think that's like, so that's kind of a good reminder for me, Lisa, because I often think that I'm trying to down like this sort of like one way road, and that's not how it works.
It's think about it like with practice. When you got better at something, it wasn't like each time you were exactly incrementally better. You practice, then sometimes you screwed it up, and then you tried again, and that's how we
fall
might
off the bike
approach
and get
group.
Back on, right? Lisa, I'm really sorry. We have there's so much to unpack here, but we have to finish the show before my producer cuts me off. But I really appreciate you coming on, and
we've had such a good show. I think we've had so many like really wonderful conversations, and I can't wait to read Grief is a Sneaky Bitch.
Grief is a Sneaky Bitch. Thank you so much.
What a great show. Some really, really lovely thoughts, and I think it's really like, I feel like both of them offered just really interesting perspectives, and sometimes
and reminders, I think, for me.
And reminders. Tell us what are you feeling. I think the grief thing about it not being fixable is something we've like spoken about before.
No, it is, but it was just it was sort of twofold. It was the fact that grief isn't fixable, but also the fact that you just need to try different things and see what works for you. You know, like, it might not be yoga, or it might not be meditation, or it might not be baking on a Sunday night, like, I don't know. But it's the idea of actually just trying it, and trying something that at the time probably will seem quite out of your comfort zone, but that's the whole point, because you've got to face the uncomfortable to be comfortable. And I think that it's easy to put those things off, and that's something that I've done a lot recently, but actually that is a way to not fix your grief, but to just find some solitude and to find some calm within the chaos of grief.
And there's definitely an argument that, like, I think is so important, that, like, no, this isn't a fixable problem. There's nothing wrong with you. I think that's something that really gets people down when they're grieving. It's like, I have to be happier. I can't have friends if I'm sad, or I can't have fun if I'm sad. I can't have these things if I'm sad. But I don't think that's true. I think you can still have all those things.
Yeah.
I think that's like the most important thing that we have to remember a lot. Like, for me personally, like, when it comes to like grief is not fixable, I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you.
No. And these fleeting moments. Well, thank you so much to our guests. And
what a lovely
Tash, love
show.
You. Yeah. Have a good week.
I will. I love you.
I love you.
Okay.
Should
we go?
I love you.
Love you guys. Bye.